Recording. What's going on, Kuya? I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, no problem, man.
So you're this badass fighter, father of four. You're a grandfather now. I think two times over, I've seen dudes melt. Like, you're a killer in the ring. I've seen dudes melt around the grandkids. Is that you?
That's me, man.
What do they make you do, Mark? What do they make you do that you're like, bro, I'm the former champ. I used to kick ass in the ring. Now look at me.
Man, they just call me Lolo, man. Lolo means grandfather in Tagalog, my native language. So they just call me that, man, and I just melt.
So they take advantage of Lolo.
Oh, they do. They do, for sure.
Before we talk about your great fighting career, the illustrious legend that you are you a superhero? I read on the internet, and everything you read on the internet is true, that you're what's up with this comic? What is it, Lupia with a Vengeance? How'd you get into this?
My sister is good friends with the director, Patricio Genosa. He is the one that actually came up with the idea that a Filipino superhero would be a great idea, and using Lumpia as his weapon of choice. So he took the idea, ran with it, and did one movie with all of his friends.
Okay.
And it was a cult classic. You know, people loved it. And so then he wanted a Filipino fighter, and in comes me, you know. So so he pitched it to my sister, pitched it to my management, and there we go. You know, I was like, oh, man, this is awesome, man. This is everything that, you know, I am Filipino. My mom loves cooking lumpia, and here we go. Let's go.
That's wild. So do you have, like, kind of special powers do you have?
So I use lumpia as my, I mean, pretty much it's like Spider-Man and Spider-Woods.
That's
know?
Great.
Yeah. So I use lumpia to subdue all of my enemies or all of my opponents, you know. So that's what I do. You know, I have lumpia that explode. I have lumpia that, like, that, you know, and that makes oil slicks for cars. I mean, it's just like lumpia for everything that I need it for.
That's great, bro. Born in Japan, moved out to Cali. What do you remember most about being a California kid growing up?
Oh, man. I mean, I just remember playing outside till the wee hours of the night, and my dad whistling from miles away, and then I had to run home or bike home, you know. So that I remember, you know, just walking to and from school, being home by myself because my parents had to work. You know, I was a child to immigrant parents that we're just hard workers. And so, you know, we my sister and I would be home by ourselves, you know, for a while, you know, so until my parents came home from work. What else? My family owned a restaurant. We worked at the restaurant pretty much every weekend or during our vacation and made some money. And my parents were just hard workers, man. You know, they taught me work ethic. They taught me resilience. They taught me perseverance. They taught me all that stuff, man. So what else, man? So that's about my family. And then, oh, yeah, man. Me getting jumped. You know, that was a big pivotal time in my life. I got bullied
Is that true that bullying got you into wrestling? Because, like you said, I just had your boy TJ Dillashaw on last night. It's weird to get into wrestling. Not a lot of people get into it. It's the three big. It's basketball, football, baseball. Out in Cali, there's other things going on. So bullying really got you into wrestling? That was true?
Yeah, man. I mean, shoot, my friends heard that I got jumped, and then they were like, hey, yeah, you need to come out to wrestle. And so I came out to wrestle, and then I was hooked from there. I was like, oh, man, this is cool. I think if I knew this, I was, you know, I would have held up against those bullies, you know. So yeah, they did get me into wrestling, and I'm glad I did it, man. They always say, you know, your life experiences shape and mold you into who you are and who you become, right? So, but I feel that your life choices do that even more so, you know? So what you choose in your life shapes you even more than your experiences do, you know? So, so yeah, man, that's how it happened.
And you're still into the anti-bullying campaign because it's such a huge epidemic that kind of gets overlooked now. You know, if you see something going on, like, it leads to depression, drug use, suicide, a ton of things. So you're still involved in the anti-bullying campaign, the push for more, to get it out there more and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. It's called I've Got Your Back program. It's here in Orange County. I partnered with the Orange County Department of Education out here. So, yeah. It's our program.
It's wild because some people get into hobbies for whatever reason. You get bullied, you start wrestling just to defend yourself, and yet you become this superstar stud. You go out to Oklahoma State to start, and that's a big transition, California to Oklahoma State. Did you become a cowboy when you went out there?
Yeah.
Were you dressed in the role? Were you wearing the cowboy hat and stuff?
No, I never wore a cowboy hat, never had some boots, never did any of that stuff. But I'm proud to be an Oklahoma State Cowboy. I am, man, you know. Started listening to country music. I mean, that's about the extent of my cowboyness right there. but I love my time at Oklahoma State, and I love all the cowboys out there, you know. So it was an awesome time.
As a stud high school athlete, obviously you had different options. Obviously, Oklahoma State is one of the top five wrestling programs in the country with Minnesota and Iowa and stuff. What made you choose Oklahoma State? Because I bet you had offers from all over.
I did. I did have offers from all over. But I just remember watching videos on John Smith, How Low Can You Go?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember watching him. And then, I mean, as a freshman, you know, because I started wrestling late. I started wrestling in the eighth grade, right? And so I started as like someone just wanting to throw people, you know? So I got into Greco because my partner, Stephen Foley, he was a Greco guy. And he showed me how to like head and arm people and just, you know, work for underhooks and throw bys and stuff like that. And so I just learned how to do like Greco moves. And then all of a sudden, someone told me about John Smith and low single legs and all that stuff, and someone started hitting it on me. I was like, oh, man, that's a legit move, you know? And so I just started to pick it up. I started watching the video. Then all of a sudden, I was like, John Smith, man, this guy's dope. I like this guy, you know? So so I started following him, and then in 1994, he ended up getting the head coaching job at Oklahoma State, and I graduated in 1996, so it was his second year as head coach at Oklahoma State, and followed his career. You know, he was a six-time world champion, mm-hmm. two-time Olympic champion, one of America's best and world's best wrestlers. And so I was like, man, it would be an honor to wrestle for him, you know. So, and he was recruiting me, came out to my house, and did a home visit, and said he really wanted me, and I went to his wrestling camp, and so I was locked in. So I got to wrestle for John Smith, and he took me under his wing, man. And all the coaches over there, Mark Perry, Mark Cody, Mark Branch, ended up becoming my teammate and coach. It was an amazing, amazing time, you know. So John, I still consider a mentor, you know, a person I really highly respect. He took me under his wing. I mean, it was hard for me, you know, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
I
mean, yeah. California kid.
Yeah. I'm a California kid. I went to Oklahoma. So I wasn't used to like seeing people in cowboy boots, cowboy hat, tight Wrangler jeans. And yes. Like, I wasn't used to that. And I wasn't used to hearing music like twangy sounds and people speaking in a different way. I wasn't used to that, you know? So it was really different. I mean, when I went to the airport, this is a funny story.
All right.
When I went to the airport on my recruiting trip, I saw a guy holding up my name with, you know, with kind of a paper, a college rule paper, you know. It said Munoz. And I went up to him, and he had tight Wrangler jeans, a flannel shirt, cowboy hat, and some cowboy boots, and a big belt buckle. I'm like, dang, man, that's a real life cowboy right there. And he's got this bottle with a big old bump on his cheek, oh. And he's spitting in it. And I'm like, dang, hey, that's a real life cowboy. What's he doing with his mouth? You know, what's in his mouth? You know, and so he's spitting in it. And I didn't know because I never seen that ever before. He goes, hey, are you Mark Munoz? I go, yes, sir, I'm Mark Munoz. He goes, huh? And he spits in his bottle. He goes, well, I'm Terry Morris. I'm the equipment manager. I'm fixing to take you to see Coach Schmidt. I said, dang, this guy talks different. That's crazy. And he goes, huh? And he looks me up and down because, I mean, I'm from Vallejo, right? And so I had some Jordans on. I had, you know, baggy pants. I had, you know, a T-shirt, and I had a hat on backwards, you know, and a baseball cap on backwards. And he's like, he looks me up and down. He goes, huh, Munoz, huh? You mind me asking, son, are you some type of Mexican? No. And I go, dang, some type of Mexican. I thought there was only one type of Mexican, you know? And I go, sir, I'm Filipino. He goes, huh? Filipino? No. Filipino? I'm like, oh, dang, I'm mixed with a jalapeno now? I'm like, dang, man.
And that's some introduction right to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it was. That's how it came to be. And so I got in his pickup truck. He had a pickup truck. I think it was a Chevy 1500. I mean, everyone has a Chevy or Ford in Oklahoma, you know. So I got in his pickup truck and we headed out to go to Oklahoma State, and I met John Smith, and man, it was awesome, man. It was cool, you know. It was very different, you know, but at the same time, I grew up to be a man there. I mean, between the ages of 18 and 24, I stayed there, you know. So I coached there afterwards, after I was done, and I ended up meeting my wife there and raising two kids there, and it was a big part of my life. So Oklahoma was awesome, man. So.
Sports is obviously big in California. When you go to Oklahoma and it's the Bedlam Series, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State, did that just blow you away? Like, holy crap, the state shuts down for this. Like, does stuff like that blow you? Now, listen, sports is huge in New York and California, but out there, bro, it's a religion when those two teams play.
Man, it's crazy. It's crazy how electrifying the crowd is. I mean, it's crazy. My first dual meet there, I think we wrestled Iowa.
Okay.
And I mean, Iowa's huge, right? And so
monster.
So we end up wrestling Iowa, and then I just hear in the crowd, like, get the angle on the single leg, shelf the leg, back double leg. I'm like, wow, people are just telling me this in the crowd. Like, people just know wrestling out here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I can't be listening to them, man. I gotta be listening to coach, you know? So yeah, it was crazy, man. I mean, just the knowledge of wrestling out in Oklahoma is so vast, you know. So, but yeah, it was awesome, man. I mean, just being out there, and I mean, me growing up, part of my upbringing was Oklahoma, you know. So, I loved it all, and made some lifelong friends there, and it was an amazing experience for me.
You said you met your wife out there. How'd you guys meet?
So the softball player, because she's a softball player, softball players and wrestlers actually shared time in the weight room.
Okay.
And we had one big weight room, and then we had we called it the dungeon weight room because it was underneath Gallagher Iba Arena. And so it was like a dungeon down there. So we had one dungeon weight room, and then we had the upstairs weight room that overlooked the campus and the football field and all that stuff. It was like really nice. So we ended up working out up in the upstairs weight room, and we were sharing it with the softball team. And I saw a girl just like squatting all this way. I mean, she put 225 on. I'm like, there's no way that little girl is gonna squat 225, you know. And I'm watching. I'm like, and she did it like 8 times. I'm like, dang, she's strong, you know. I said, she's gotta be ugly, you know. She lived in all that weight. She gotta be ugly, you know. And she turned around. I was like, dang, she's pretty cute, you know. So I end up, you know, crushing on her then, and then I was like, hey, y'all see, you know, I told Hardell and Jamil and Reggie Wright and all these guys. I was like, hey, man, did you see that girl, like, do all that weight? They're like, yeah, man, she's strong. I said, yeah, I know. And that's, man, I mean, she can make strong kids, you know? And then one time, because there's only one way in to the weight room and one way out.
Okay.
So there's one time we come in and the guys I had told Chris, I mean, Christy about, they were like, they made this like barrier after we were done lifting, and they were like, hey man, you can't get out. I go, what do you mean? They're like, you got to get Christy's phone number. I go, nah, man, I'm cool. Let me out. I'm trying to get out. They won't let me out. So then I'm like thinking, dang, how am I going to get her number? You know, and this is close to Halloween. So I'm thinking, oh man, maybe I just make up a party at my house and then invite the whole softball team so I can get her number and plan for that, you know?
All right. So
that's how I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. it took me a minute to think about that, but then I was like, all right, that's what I'm going to do, you know? So then I'm kind of being slick, right? Just, you know, I get some water and I get some Gatorade and I'm walking towards her and I'm talking to people and, you know, just kind of nonchalantly trying to be cool, you know? And then I end up coming towards her and she goes, hey, and I go, hey, what's up, Christy? Hey, I just wanted to see if you and a softball team wanted to come out to a Halloween party that the wrestlers are putting on. And she's like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. And I go, I'm like, awesome. Do you mind if I get your number and we can plan it? And she goes, yeah, that's fine. And I'm like, sweet.
That was easy.
Yeah, it was easy. It was easy. So I ended up getting her number and the rest is history.
Then you had to plan a party.
And then I planned a party, yeah. So, and the thing is we lived in the middle of nowhere because one of the supporters of Oklahoma State Wrestling owned this house in the sticks. So I mean there was houses like just like miles, like a mile away from each other. It's not like a neighborhood. So there was a house like kind of far from campus. I mean, it was like probably 25 minutes away from campus.
Oh, that's a hike, yeah.
Yeah, man. So we lived in that house, and it was, you know, the next neighbor away was probably a mile away. So we ended up having this pretty awesome party, you know? So, I mean, we had music in the garage and, like, you know, we had food and all that stuff, man. It was pretty awesome, you know? So she ended up coming and bringing a softball team and, you know, soccer players were there. I mean, it was pretty much an athlete party, you know? So that's how I got her number, and the rest is history, man. She ended up liking me afterwards. So now, you know,
most importantly, does she cook Filipino food?
She does. She does.
Wow.
She knows how to wrap lumpia.
All right.
She knows how to make chicken adobo. She knows how to do langonisa and tocino and fried rice. So
all right.
So yeah, she's good, well, man.
What's your favorite Filipino comfort food?
Oh man, dude. How much time we got?
Oh, come on, man.
I love all Filipino food, man. I mean, comfort food, I would probably say for breakfast would be longanisa and eggs.
Okay.
For lunch, it would probably be like adobo, chicken adobo and rice. For dinner, I'd probably say either nilaga or sinigang, which is like a stew. A stew with like beef or pork ribs or in a broth with potatoes, cabbage, okra, or whatever vegetables you want to put in it. It's like a beef broth soup with meat and veggies. It's and so good.
Dessert, you're going Hollow Hollow, of course, right?
Oh, Hollow Hollow is where it's at, man.
Nakaputa Kanabasa Pilipinas or Hindi?
Oh, Marunong Magtagalog, ah.
Oh, Bobo, Pilipina na sa ako.
Oh, sige. Oh, puro Tagalog na lang sa interview.
No, hindi. I have too many Puti listeners. Puti listeners. When's the last time you've been back there?
My last fight. So my last fight was in 2015. So it's been a while. May 16th, 2015. And I stayed there probably about 2 weeks after I was done. Because, man, I got, I think, 4 or 5 generations of my family still there. Yeah, because my mom comes from 8 brothers and sisters, and my dad comes from 9 brothers and sisters.
Oh, my God.
And half of them are in the Philippines, and their kids have 5 kids, 5 or, you know, 4 or 5 kids, and then their kids have kids. So it's like there's generations, you know, and their kids have kids. So it's
wild.
Like, I'm like, what the heck, man? I mean, I went there and it was just like a family reunion. You know, it was like they were calling me Lolo, and Lolo means grandfather. Uh-huh. You know, so I'm like, wait. Who's your mom and dad, and who's their mom and dad? like, how am I related to you? You know, so it was awesome though, man. Like, and they were so filled with pride when I was there because you know, I was a headliner over there. You know, so
yeah.
it was a pretty amazing moment, you know, to be with my family out there. So.
I really appreciate giving me the beginning of the interview to get to know you, because everything usually shoots right into wrestling, right into fighting. So I want to know more about you. Here's what can be so frustrating for wrestlers in college. You're one of the best fighters in the world, and yet there's really not that next level. Listen, you made it work. TJ made it work. But so many All-American wrestlers, that's it for them, unless you go WWE route, which isn't really an option. When did the idea of going to fight mixed martial arts happen after college? Like, you graduate Oklahoma State, you leave. I remember you stayed out there for a little while coaching. When's like, okay, next move, I'm going to go be a fighter. How does that happen?
I never wanted to punch and kick people in the face for a living, man. Never came to my mind, man. I mean, I end up graduating from Oklahoma State. You know, I have my wife and my kids, you know. So, you know, and I'm training for the Olympics. I mean, this is back in, you know, 2004, you know, I'm competing and I'm going to the Olympic training ceremony every now and then. You know, it was hard because I had a family, you know, so
yeah.
I couldn't go as much as like Jim Mel Kelly or Daniel Cormier, and those guys went like all the time, and I had to stay home, you know, because, you know, my family, you know, so, it was a time where it was, a time where I was just like trying to figure out what I wanted to do, you know? And so I ended up getting a call from Lenny Zaleski because he heard that I wanted to come back home, be closer to home to my family. And he said, hey man, I have a job here at UC Davis. I just came here. And Lenny Zaleski, he's one of the big names at Iowa. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. he has a brother named Jim Zaleski who won 3 national championships. And Lenny was an amazing wrestler himself. You know, he was like a 3-time All-American, and he just is one of the great wrestlers from Iowa too. So when he had asked me, I was like, oh man, that'd be awesome, you know, to be literally like 20 minutes away from my hometown. And we were looking at, you know, move back to California anyways, because my wife is from California too. So I was like, okay, talk to my wife about it. She goes, let's do it. I'm like, sweet, let's go.
Wow.
So we ended up moving. And then when I was there, a guy by the name of Uriah Faber was there as well. You know, so, and he was, okay, let me talk to you about Uriah. Uriah, man, he is salt of the earth, man. He's a genuine dude, man. He's one of my best friends, man. I mean, he's just a go-getter. He's a hustler. He cares about relationships. He cares about people. And right away, man, when I met him, I was like, man, this dude's a genuine dude, man. And he goes, hey, Munoz, man, I'm getting into this sport called MMA. I'm like, what's MMA? He goes, well, I mean, we basically fight. we fight for money. I go, wait, is it one of those, like, you know, like, no holds barred, like, yeah, fighting stuff? He goes, yeah, kind of, but there's rules now. I go, dang. I said, man, I'm a lover, man. I'm not a fighter, bro. I'm coaching now, you know, I'm teaching, I'm coaching, I'm getting my master's, and I got a wife and, you know, two kids, one on the way. I said, dude, like, I'm getting my master's degree, you know, so it's like, I don't have that much time on my hands. He goes, man, you'd be really good at it, man. Just come by my gym and just train a little bit. I'm like, all right, whatever. So it took me a while to kind of like come out and train. And when I came out and trained, I loved it. I was like, oh man, this is cool. And I like it, you know? So then he basically was like, all right, man, why don't you just come out you know, we have this training camp with Randy Couture. It's going to be at Sierra College. I mean, why don't you just come out and help Randy out, because, you know, he needs to brush up on his wrestling. I go, sick. Let's go. You know, and so we end up going over there. And, man, it was a crazy training camp because Randy Couture, Brandon Vera, Quinn Rampage Jackson, Tito Ortiz. Oh, my God.
These are the icons Frank of wrestling.
Frank Trigg was there. And then James Irvin, Scott Smith. You know, it was those guys there. And I'm like, I'm watching these guys spar. I'm like,
were you intimidated, dude, Mark? Were you intimidated?
Heck yeah, man. Okay. I was like, man, I don't know how to do those things, man. He goes, hey, man. He goes, hey, just double jab, double leg. You'll be fine, bro. I'm like, Uriah. Bro, I just started, homie. Like, I can't just, like, double jab, double leg somebody right now, man. And I'm like, he goes, man, you'll be fine, dude. You've been training for about 2 months, man. You'll be good. I'm like, 2 months, man? These guys have been training for years. Like, how am I going to keep up with them? And he goes, no, trust me, man. You'll be fine. So I was like, oh, whatever. So then it was sparring day, right? And so, I mean, they're all getting suited up. They're all, like, laughing and joking and having fun, and I'm nervous. I'm like, dang, dude, these guys are sparring and I'm about to spar with these guys. Like, what the heck? Like, why am I here? I'm like, this is nuts, man. And I'm like putting on these gloves. I'm like, dude, I'm actually supposed to punch somebody with these small gloves
in the face?
In the face, like, and I'm gonna get punched. I mean, dude, like, I'm genuinely afraid to, like, spar these guys, you know? And Randy goes, all right, guys, time to pair up. You know, it's time to drill, you know? And I'm like, oh, gosh, man. Dang it. Like, you know, and everyone, you know, puts on their headgear and then gloves and shin guards, and we're drilling, right? We're drilling. We're double jabbing, we're doing some combinations, and then we do, you know, combinations and takedowns, combination kicks, combination back to combination takedown, you know, so we're doing cage work and all this stuff. And then afterwards, I mean, it was probably about maybe like 30 to 40 minutes of drilling. And then all of a sudden, I thought we were just going to drill.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, Randy goes, all right, guys, it's time to spar. And then I'm like, ooh.
Oh, shit.
It's about to get real right now. You know, so I'm like, oh, dang. So I'm like, I'm thinking, all right, let me just, like, fade away in the shadows and just, you know, get some popcorn and soda and watch these guys spar, right? And then, I mean, there was, I think it was odd. It was like 7 or 9 guys there, right?
Okay.
And then one person didn't have a partner inside the cage, because there's one cage there, and it was Randy.
No, don't tell me your first sparring was with Randy. Oh my God!
Yeah, so I end up going with Randy, and Uriah is like there on the side, and he goes, Munoz, double jab, double leg. And I'm like, what the heck, bro? Like, come on, man. You know, like,
that's some introduction.
So, yeah, man. So I mean, I'm like inside the cage. They put the pin in, and I can't get out. So I'm like, man. man, I can't. I mean, all right, it's about to be on now. So then, you know, and I think Randy knew it was like my first time, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he came up and he was just like peppering me with his jab and stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm trying to pepper him back with my jab, and then he starts like clinching me up, and I clinch him up, and end up almost foot sweeping me, and then he picks it up, you know. So I'm like, ooh, okay. So I feel him picking it up, and I pick it up, and then now he's sparring hard, you know. So
oh my god.
I'm like, oh shoot. So I'm like, and your eyes like double jab, double leg, double jab, and I'm trying to double leg him. He's sprawling on me. We're scrambling, and then he gets behind me. I stand up. He puts me against the cage, and he starts hitting in my body like so hard. I'm like, oh. your eyes like get off the cage, you know, spin him against the cage. I'm like, oh, okay. So like I'm trying to like get him off the cage. He's saying rock the boat. So go one side and go the other. So I was like, all right, so I end up putting him against the cage, and then he ends up separating, and then Uriah's like, double jab, double leg, and I'm like, all right, let's go. So I end up committing, you know, so I committed to it, and I double jab, and I get in on his legs. I'm like, ooh, I'm in deep on his legs.
Wow.
So I end up picking him up and slamming him, and then, you know, and then Uriah's like, ground and pound, and I'm like raining punches from the heavens, like, Donkey Konging them, you know, like just like going to town. And he's like, hey, we don't go 100% on the punches, man. You know, I got to fight in 2 weeks. I go, my bad. So then he like reverses the position and starts like hitting me. And I'm like, wait, I thought we was going 100%. You know, so anyways, I end up having the time of my life, man. I end up having fun. And you're right. I mean, Randy comes up to me, goes, hey, Mark, you really need to consider doing mixed martial arts, man. You're a natural. I'm like, wait, you're the natural.
Yeah.
He goes, no, man, you do really good. And Uriah, like, backhands me in the chest. He goes, see, I told you, bro. And that spawned my fight career right there, man. So 11 months later, I was in the UFC.
Yeah, because you fought in, like, a World Extreme Cage Fighting and then UFC 96. Obviously, you had the connections, and now you get a little bit of a pedigree. How does that call happen? Does someone call you up like, hey, bro, you want to fight UFC 96? Let's go.
Yeah, so Uriah.
What?
Uriah helped everything out, man. I mean, it was my management, you know. So, you know, Jeff Meyer and Mike Roberts, they were with MMA Inc. And Uriah's partnered with those guys. And those guys, man, I owe a lot to those guys, man. They started my career and, you know, they're awesome management, man. They're up in the Sacramento area, you know, so, you know, they're so amazing. They know what they're doing up there, and Uriah just, he was big time. He helped me out, man. So,
wow.
So they basically, you know, guided me in my career and helped me to get to where I'm at, you know? So I owe a lot to them, man. They're amazing. They're awesome people.
I always loved that you had the reputation of being probably one of the nicest UFC fighters with your nickname, the Filipino Wrecking Machine. It was always so funny. Who gives you that nickname? Because you're like literally the nicest guy in the game.
So I didn't have a nickname. And my manager at the time was Mike Roberts. And he goes, hey, man, you got to have a nickname, man. And I go, I do? Why can't I just be Mark Munoz? He goes, no, you got to have a nickname. How about the Philippine Wrecking Machine? I go, hey, man, that has a good ring.
Yeah, I like it. You know? I dig it.
Yeah. And I go, man, that's awesome. And then I end up putting it out there. And then I get flack from the Filipino community because I'm a person. And so when you refer to a person, you can't be called Philippine. You have to be called
Filipino.
Yeah. So then that's how I changed it to the Filipino Wrecking Machine. So that's how it started, and that's how I ended up having that nickname.
And I don't want to go fight by fight. I want to know more about, because you're traveling, you're going to Abu Dhabi, Vegas, you're enjoying life on the road, but you're also a father with a wife. Is it difficult to juggle? A lot of these dudes are single dudes, or, you know, they're doing their thing. You're juggling now being a legit family man. And now fighting in Abu Dhabi, was that a tough thing to juggle?
Yeah, it was tough, man. I mean, there was times where I would be away from home, and for long periods of time. And my mom, my wife was being a single mom pretty much a lot, you know, and so, and we had young kids.
Yeah.
And four kids. So we had four kids all under the age of 8 years old. So we had 8, 6, three, and then an infant. So my wife is a champ, man. She's a champ, you know? So, and I just saw how hard it was for her, you know? And I just like, man, you know, I need to call it. But this was the straw that broke the camel's back. My wife and I were arguing. She goes, you need to think about, you know, transitioning to something else because this is hard, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, let's talk about it, you know? And so, we just started, you know, discussing it and had heated debates about it. But then this was a straw that broke the camel's back. My son ended up turning 13 years old.
Okay.
And, he was a stud, baseball player and a stud soccer player.
Okay. You know?
And he, wanted to wrestle. And so he comes up to me and he goes, "Hey dad, I want to wrestle, but you're always gone. And I want you to coach me." And I'm like, I was like, oh dang. That just hit me in the chest like so hard. I was like,
wow.
He stabbed me in the heart, you know? So I was like, oh man, you know? So then I was like, okay. So I thought about it. I'm like, you know, I'm done. That was a straw that broke the camel's back right there. And I go, I'm done. You know? And so I told my management, I said, I want to announce my retirement and I want to move into the next phase of my life. You know? So I end up announcing my retirement. And although I was on the verge of becoming a world champion,
yeah.
But family is more important to me than that, you know? So that's what happened. And then my son got into wrestling and then he ended up becoming a state champ, you know, a national champ.
Oh my
God. Getting a full ride scholarship to Oregon State.
Okay. You wouldn't let him go to Oklahoma.
Well, he wanted to.
Not the Sooners though. Not the Sooners.
No.
Never.
He can't say that. It's like cussing to me, man. You can't do that. Chris Pendleton, who babysat him when he was young, he ended up getting the job at Arizona State.
Okay.
And he was recruiting Trey Heavy. And Trey already had a connection with him because Trey got babysat by him, you know. So Oklahoma State wanted him as well. So Coach John was still coaching and they wanted him as well. He wanted to go there, but, you know, there's just some miscommunication there was just some miscommunication there, and then Trey just felt that it would be best for him to follow Chris Pendleton, you know, so that's how he felt, you know. So he went to Arizona State his first, like, I think it was 2 years, and then finished, and then it's his senior year this year, so he's finishing up his career at Oregon State because Chris Pendleton ended up getting the head coaching job there. So he ended up following him to Oregon State. So
that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, they might win a national championship in football. So it's going to be a good time to be there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
quick question. When you brought the UFC to the Philippines, which was beyond sick. I remember the card because one of my closest friends is from the Philippines and the whole card was set up perfectly. Boxing and basketball reign supreme out there. Is MMA becoming bigger out there? Is obviously your name's huge out there, but are they getting more into it?
Yes. MMA is getting really big out there. There's a team out there. It's called Team Lakai. They got some good fighters. They train up in the mountains in I forget where it's at, but Team Lakai, they train up in the mountains and they got some really good fighters like Edward Foliang. There's like a bunch of guys out there that are up and coming. And so, Yeah, MMA is growing. It's big, you know. So, of course, like Filipino fighters and Asian fighters fight for one FC, yes. You know. So, and then some of them come to the UFC. Some of them fight for Bellator, but you know, a lot of them fight for one. You know, because it's a big Asian organization. You know, so
yeah, they have fights out in Bangkok all the time, in Singapore. That's really catering to them too.
Yep. So yeah, it's growing big time.
I have to ask, because if not, my wife and her family would kill me. Ever get to meet Senator Manny Pacquiao? Anytime a Filipino person comes on, you have to ask about Manny Pacquiao. Both in the fight game, you ever get to meet Manny?
I used to train with him. So,
are you serious?
Yeah. So I was trained early in my career when I moved down to Southern California. This guy named Tariq Azim, who I trained with at Fairtex up in San Francisco, is from the LA area and trained at Wildcard Gym. So Tariq introduced me to Freddie Roach, who trained me my first like 2.5-3 years when I moved out to Southern California. And so I would commute from Orange County to like Wildcard Gym, and it would sometimes take 2 hours to get there. So like four and a half hours round trip to get there because of traffic in LA. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
But it was worth it, man. I mean, I end up training with Freddie Roach, and you know, I end up, you know, training with Manny, you know, a lot of the times. And so Manny, when he's got fights coming up, they would shut down Wildcard Gym, mm-hmm. and they would allow me to come in and train. You know, so
really,
yeah. So that was cool, man. I mean, when Freddie couldn't hold for me because he was training Manny, I was getting held by, you know, Panda, this guy named Panda. I don't know his real name, but he's a Mexican guy that looks like a panda bear, so they call him Panda. But he was good on the mitts, man. He was really good, so. And that's when I was like, you know, I was raw, you know, yeah. So, you know, and so just going out there and watching and being around those guys, it was amazing, you know? So yeah, I got to train with Manny over at Wildcard Gym and, took pictures, got autographs and all that stuff, man. So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Quick question about your faith. It's very important to you. Fighting, did that ever conflict with anything? Like you're going to war in the ring. Yeah, you're this calm, serene, zen-like dude, like a roller coaster trying to like overcome that hurdle of like, I'm a calm dude, now I'm going to go to the ring and fight for my life.
No, because, I mean, a lot of times in the Bible, I mean, there's a verse in Psalms 144:1, it says, blessed be the Lord my rock, for he equips my hands for battle, my fingers for war. So like King David, you know, David and Goliath, right? Mm-hmm. David, I mean, he slayed a giant. You know, I mean, he cut off his head, put it on a stake, and then everybody just, you know, revel over the God that he served, you know? And so, I mean, there's countless accounts of people fighting in the Bible, you know? So, and that's one of them, you know? So, it's just a part of the faith, you know? So I think if, you know, and I believe that if you use it right, you know, that it's good, you know? And so I believe that God led me to fighting, you know, I believe God is going to use it for, you know, to share the gospel with people. I feel that I can share my faith even more so because I got into it, you know? So yeah, faith is a big part of who I am. My kids love Jesus and, you know, my family, you know, as for me and my house will serve the Lord, you know? So, that's a verse in Psalms too. So I just, you know, for me, like faith is huge. Faith is big to me, you know? So, you know, that's just how it is, you know, I'm always going to be that way. And you know, I believe that, you know, that, you know, he lavished his grace and his mercy on us. And I believe that people need to know that, you know, so, to know that peace, to know that grace, and to know that mercy, you know. So, and you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to share that with people, and people come to know who Jesus is. And yeah, man, I'm proud to be able to share that.
Perfectly said. And now you're ready to finish up with some quick hit questions.
Yeah, let's go.
You and I are at a bar here in New York City. Who's the coolest person in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back? You want to impress the whole bar. Who's the coolest cat?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I did a movie with Kevin James.
That's a great eye. That's a good answer. Come on, man.
Yeah.
So, that's a good answer.
Yeah, so Kevin James. I mean, I got a lot of cool people on my phone, man.
No, you Kevin know? James is a solid one.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, I got Anderson Silva on there. I got Selma Hayek. That's another one, right?
See, listen, if you're in a bar in New York with a bunch of dudes, that might win that one.
Yeah. She was a co-star for the movie I was in, Here Comes the Boom.
Yeah.
Kevin James, yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Cool. How about coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
Shoot. Man, I would say the coolest piece of memorabilia I own. I mean, I have my gloves, my gloves that I laid down in a cage.
That was an emotional moment too, yeah.
Yeah, my last fight. I have them, you know.
Yeah, that was emotional to watch. All right, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
How about a couple more? One sporting event in history you could have witnessed live, front row to any sporting event in the history of the world. What are you watching?
Man, Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
All day, dude. His last fight.
You know? How about, here we go. Last show you binged watched.
Oh, shoot. You know, man, I don't have that much time to watch. Yeah. But let's see. I mean, the last show, basically, and this is going to date me, man, was probably Friends. I love Friends.
Okay, you know? Okay.
So.
it's an older show, but it's all right. Well, it's
light. I'm just saying, man, I don't watch. I mean, because at night, dude, I'm a wrestling club coaching kids how to wrestle. Yeah. You know? So I don't watch TV very much, man.
And how about this? It's 2 a.m. You're home alone. What are you going to eat to binge out? You can have a fat cheat day. What are you eating at 2 a.m.?
Man, a ribeye steak, man, all day.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah, can't go wrong with the ribeye.
Bro, this was so much fun. I hope you had fun, and I'm glad you give me more of the backstory. I want to know more about you instead of going through every single fight like every other interview does.
No, it's awesome.
This was so much fun, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks for having me on the show, man.
Maligayang Pasko po. See you soon.
Maraming salamat.
See you later, brother.
All right.
Bye-bye.
When you're part of a military family, you understand sacrifice and support. At American Public University, we honor your dedication by extending our military tuition savings to your extended family. Parents, spouses, legal partners, siblings, and dependents all qualify for APU's preferred military rate of just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and master's level programs. American Public University. Value for the whole family. Learn more at apu.apus.edu/military.